Before I get started, just want to make sure that there's a clarification for those that were in my class this morning. I am not advocating that it is okay to kill Robert. If you were in the class, you know what we're talking about. The year was 2000. And I had just graduated from Freed Hardeman University. I was married to Devin, newly married. We were already expecting our first son, Austin, was on the way. And we were in the process of preparing to move to Russia because we wanted to be missionaries. So it was still early on in the fundraising stage, and it was a Sunday night. We were traveling somewhere in Western Kentucky trying to persuade some congregation to support our work. And so that Sunday night, I had given a report and our plan to the congregation. And after services were over, we were standing in the aisles talking to people. And as I was standing there, there was this lady who just started making a beeline down the aisle, just straight for me. And as she comes up to me, she looks over at my wife, and my wife was very obviously very pregnant. And she looks at me and she says, "I don't know how you can do what you're doing." She said, "I don't understand how you can take that baby and move that baby away from his grandparents like that." She said, "I could never let my daughter do that. I could never let her take my grandkids away." She wasn't trying to be rude. She was not trying to intentionally be hurtful or hateful. She really just didn't understand. She didn't understand how we could leave our parents and we could leave our family and we could leave our home and we could move to this foreign country and we could take our baby with us. And so I tried to put her mind at ease. I told her, "Well, you know, we're both preacher's kids. We grew up moving around. This is the way our parents raised us. Our parents are very supportive of what we're doing. In fact, they're encouraging us to do this." But as I was talking to her, I could tell it wasn't making a difference. She just didn't understand. Our topic for this morning is emboldened missions. And my goal for this lesson is simple enough. I just want to try to help you to maybe understand a little bit about the mindset of the person who would do mission work. To help you to understand both some of the challenges as well as some of the joys that come with living on the mission field. And I hope along the way to maybe give you some tips, some thoughts on some things that you can do to encourage the missions that you support, the missionaries that you support in their work. And so what's in the mind of the missionary? To answer that question, I want us to look at Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 through 10. And we're going to consider God's call to Abraham. And I think that there are three things, one in each of these verses, that we can learn that will help us to better understand the mindset of someone who would leave their home and become a missionary. Beginning with number one, missionaries leave. Hebrews 11, verse 8. "By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going." So the story of Abraham, we know it begins with God telling him he has to leave. In fact, those are literally the very first words that God speaks to Abraham in the Bible. Genesis chapter 12 and verse 1, the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you." God said, "Abraham, you have to leave. You have to leave your country. You have to leave your family. You have to leave your home. And you have to go to a place where you have never been before." In fact, God doesn't even tell him where he's going at first. God just says, "You have to leave." And can you imagine what Abraham must have been thinking, what must have been going through his mind in that moment? In the ancient world, family was everything. John Hartley observes, "A father's house was the basis of a person's identity, his livelihood, and his security. Most ancients never wanted to leave the solidarity of the family. Abraham must have been thinking, this is crazy. You want me to leave? Family was everything. It's the center of all life in the ancient world. Hartley says, nobody would want to do that. Nobody would want to leave that. And yet here God is, and he's telling Abraham, that's what you have to do. God says, you have to leave behind the people that you know, the people that you love. God says, you have to leave behind the shelter, the security, the protection of being surrounded by the clan. You have to leave behind that inheritance. The inheritance is supposed to secure your future and the future of your descendants. You have to give all that up. And you have to go to the land that I will show you, a land you don't know. God tells Abraham, you have to leave. And to his credit, Abraham has faith. Genesis 12 and verse 4, Abraham went as the Lord told him. Like God's call to Abraham, the missionary call is a call to leave home. It's a call to leave behind our family and our friends. It's a call to leave behind that which is familiar, that which is comfortable, that which, at least in our minds, is normal. It's a call to leave behind the safety and the security of home. And I'm going to admit to you this morning that that's tough. It's not an easy thing to do. November of 2022 marks the beginning of what would become one of the darkest and most challenging periods in my life. In the span of just a couple of months, my father had earlier in the year been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and so my mom and dad left in November to go back to the U.S. in order to have surgery, to have the cancer removed. And as dad was recovering in the hospital the day after his surgery, we got a call. My grandmother, my mom's mom, had just suddenly gotten sick and just died unexpectedly. A couple of weeks after that, got another call. It was Corey. He was just broken. Corey and Heather were expecting a baby. Would have been our first grandchild. He called to tell me they had just learned they had lost the baby. He was devastated. And so we're grieving through that. And this is two or three weeks later, we get another call. My parents had been traveling in Arkansas. They were doing reporting on their work, and my mom ended up in the emergency room. And they did scans to figure out what was wrong, and they discovered a mass, a very large mass. Later tests would confirm that her colon cancer had come back and much more severely than before. So we're still dealing with that, and a couple of weeks later, we get another call. This time it's Devin's family, and her grandmother has, her health has just started deteriorating very rapidly, and it reached a point the family just couldn't take care of her anymore, and they were going to have to put her into a special care facility, and within about a month, she would have died too. She had died too. And I'm going to tell you, it was hard. It was so hard not to be at home, sitting there in the waiting room of the hospital with my dad and my mom as they were going through their cancer treatments. And it was so hard not to be able to come home and to be at the funerals of my grandmother and Devin's grandmother, who both of them had great impacts upon us growing up. To not be there with my family trying to comfort them and in turn being comforted by them. And I'm going to tell you, one of the hardest things I've ever had to do was to not go just straight to the airport, jump on an airplane, and fly to Denver, Colorado, just so I could wrap Corey and wrap Heather up in my arms and cry with them. In those moments, we felt so alone. We felt so isolated. We felt so far away from home. And that's when we received a visitor. A young man by the name of Elliot Harris from Henderson, Tennessee, wanted to take his very first mission trip, and he wanted to come to Fiji because his parents knew us. And when he got there, he pulled out of his bag a gift. It was a frame of the Henderson Church of Christ youth group. And it had been signed by many of them. And I cannot tell you how precious that gift was in that moment. Now to you, it may seem like that seems like such a very small thing. But in that moment, with everything we were dealing with everything that we were going through, I cannot describe how important it was that right then we had that little reminder. That little reminder that even though we were on the other side of the world, we were not forgotten. There were people who still loved us. There were people who still cared about us. There were people at home that were still thinking about us. And so I want you to understand this morning, there is not a missionary who has ever been on the mission field, who's been there for any length of time, who has not had to make exactly these types of choices. Do I stay on the field during this time of personal crisis or do I go back home? There's not a missionary who's not had to make those tough choices where they've had to miss out on important events. They've missed funerals. They've missed graduations. They've missed weddings. They've missed births. They've missed other special events in the lives of their families. Times when they would have given anything to be back at home with their family and the people they love, but they can't be because they chose to leave. What can we do to help? Let them know they're not forgotten. Send them those cards and those letters and those emails and those texts. I can't tell you how many times I would be having a bad day and then I'd pop up my email and there would be an email from somebody just saying, hey, we just want you to know we're thinking about you and we appreciate what you're doing. Give them a call just to talk. Now use your app, make sure you're not calling at 2 a.m. But give them a call, not just to check on the work, call to check on them, just to talk and let them know they're remembered. Send people to them. Send people to check on the work, but more than that, send people to check on the missionary. Because the work is important, but so is the person or people doing that work. And you would be shocked at how much those visits will improve the overall quality of the work. Send people to check on them to make sure they're okay. And finally, recognize that missionaries are people. They're still people. They don't give that up by moving to the mission field. And as people, sometimes they need a break. There are going to be times when they need to come home, not just to report, not just to fundraise. They need to come home to be with their family. Don't make them feel ashamed of that. Help them and encourage them. Missionaries leave. Number two, missionaries live. Continuing, Hebrews 11, verse 9. By faith he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. So not only does God tell Abraham he has to leave his home, but notice God also says you've got to move to a foreign land. What's more, he emphasizes that during that time, Abraham, along with Jacob and Isaac, all of them would spend that time living in tents. And this is an intentional reminder. Tents are temporary dwellings. They're designed to go from place to place to place. And what the Hebrew writer in this text is trying intentionally to emphasize is that temporary nature of their dwelling in the land. That idea that they were constantly moving around. They never truly belonged. They never truly fit in one place. They always were moving to the next location. In fact, he goes on to continue verse 13. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles in the world. The Hebrews writer says they were pilgrims. They were exiles. They were strangers. They didn't belong. They lived in a land, but they didn't belong to the land. They were always going to be considered outsiders. There's a great example of this in Genesis chapter 26. It's the story of Isaac. In Genesis chapter 26, we're told that God has instructed Isaac that he needs to settle down in the region of the Philistines. And so Isaac is living there, and while he's living there, we're told in verse 12 that God blessed him. And as those verses continue, we find that Isaac is going to become very wealthy. And so Isaac has finally found a place. He has settled down. He's being blessed by God. And it seems like he's finally found a home where he can stay, a home where he can prosper. And what was the response? The king notices it, verse 16, and he comes to Isaac. He says, "Go away from us, for you are much mightier than we are." Here Isaac is, he's found this home, this place of belonging. Things are going well, and the leadership comes and they say, "We don't want you here anymore. We want you to leave." And so Isaac gets up and he moves, and the Bible says he goes to a place where his father Abraham had once lived and even dug a well. And so Isaac redigs the well, and there's water there. And so he's found a place to settle down, and we're told some of the locals come to Isaac in verses 19 and 20, and they say, "That water's ours. You have to leave." So Isaac moves. He goes and finds another of his father's wells. He redigs it. Again, he finds water. And again, the locals come and say, "Nope, that water's ours. You have to leave." And so he goes another time, and he goes and finds another well, and he digs it, and finally nobody comes. They let him keep the well, and so he stays there for a time. But here's the point. Isaac is a second generation resident of this region. And yet still he doesn't belong. The population still sees him as an outsider. He doesn't really fit in. He never really belongs with them. Just like the call of Abraham, the call of the missionary is to live in a foreign land. You know, there's a difference between visiting a place and living there. When you visit a place, everything's new, it's exciting, it's exotic, right? You see these weird customs and it's exotic. And then you get to go home and tell all your friends about it. But when you live there, things are different because you are different. People don't look like you. People don't talk like you. They don't think like you. They don't dress like you. They don't eat like you. So a few weeks after we had moved, 6 weeks or so after we had moved to Fiji, we were invited to attend the All Fiji Workshop. It was being held on the North Island in this very remote village called Nambawalu. It's a small bush village. And so the first night we were there, we were sitting, they had erected on these posts, just these tin roofs. It's just this cheap, temporary pavilion. And we were sitting under it waiting for supper, and the dish on the menu was fried fish. Now, I like fried fish. It was mentioned earlier, before I moved to Fiji, I was in Parsons, and at least once every couple of weeks, Devin and I would make our way down to the river, and we'd eat fried catfish fillets. So we're having fried fish. Well, they start bringing us the fish, and when I say they fried the fish, I mean they fried the whole fish. Some of you are thinking whole fried. No, I'm talking scales, tail, everything. And they had fried that fish, and then they had taken a butcher knife, and they had just chopped it right in the middle. It was like a coin flip. You get heads or tails. And so we're sitting segregated, and men one place, women another. That's the Fiji culture. And so we're sitting there, and some of the ladies bring me plates, and they bring me a choice. I chose tails. My wife was not so lucky. She's sitting with the ladies, and she's the Kavalongi woman. She's the visiting, the white woman, and she is coming. She's our honored guest, so we want to give her the honored piece. And in Fiji culture, the piece everybody wants is the head. And so they give her the head. And my wife looks down at her fish, and her fish looks back up at her. Still has the eye in it. And one of the dear Christian sisters is sitting by her, and she says, "Oh, you're so lucky they gave you the head." She said, "The eye, that's my favorite part. It's so tender, it's so juicy." And so my wife ate the head. I don't think she ate the eye. Mission work is not just about leaving behind the familiar. It's about moving to a new place. It's about moving to a place with different customs and different people and different ways of viewing things and doing things. Mission work is going to monthly fellowship meals where you know you may be eating fish heads. You may be eating some dish or several dishes that are made from the dalo leaf that you know, if you know anything about taro, you know it's going to leave your throat itching for an hour after you eat it. Or it may be you're going to be eating this gelatin dish that they all seem to love that's made out of coconut cream and seaweed. Smells like a dead fish. Mission work is going to a funeral gathering and sitting through a very ritual ceremony, sitting around the kava bowl where everything is being done in Fijian. And nobody can tell you what you're supposed to be doing, but you're supposed to be sitting there and you're supposed to be participating and you're supposed to know exactly what you're supposed to do, even though nobody will tell you what that is. Mission work is having the taxi driver take advantage of your children because they're the Kavalongi kids, overcharging them because they're foreigners. Mission work is being kept at a distance, sometimes even by members of the church, because no matter how much you work to blend in, no matter how much time you spend with them, no matter how much you love them, there's always going to be that sense where you're a little different and you don't fully belong. Now, understand, it's not always that way. In fact, most days are wonderful. Most days are rewarding. Most days are fulfilling. And mission work, you get all these exciting experiences, great stories, great and wonderful times. And you're going to make wonderful relationships, people that you're going to come to know and to love, people who are going to laugh with you and sometimes at you, people who are going to cry with you when you're hurting, people who will pray with you when your mom has cancer, and people who will surround you with so much love and care. But then there are going to be those days when you struggle, those days when you just don't feel like you belong, those days when their culture is going to clash hard with your culture, days when you're going to be left wondering, "I don't know how much longer I can stay. I don't know how much longer I can keep doing this." And it's going to be on one of those days that you're going to get a notice in the mail that you have a package. And you're going to make your way down to the post office to sign for it and clear customs. And you're going to open up a box and you're going to find that the ladies at church have sent you ranch packets. 92 ranch packets. Just so you can have a reminder of one of your favorite foods from home. And it's going to be one of those days when you're going to get a phone call that one of the members at Henderson has decided to cash in their frequent flyer miles just so they can send your son home to be with you for Christmas. How can we help our missionaries? Send them reminders from home. Send them that occasional care package with some of their favorite things, those things they can't get wherever they're living. Those things that give them just that little reminder of home that keep them going in a foreign land. and be willing to send family members to visit. And I know this is a hard thing, and most missionaries don't like to ask. And so I'm already home, so I can ask. Send family members to visit them. You're not just doing some selfish thing for those missionaries. You are doing something for the work. Because I guarantee those reminders from home will strengthen them, and they will keep them going through the next dark trial. Be willing to send them people that they know and care about, to love them and spend time with them. Missionaries live. And finally, missionaries long. Verse 10 says, "For Abraham was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God." Here's the payoff. Here's what kept Abraham and Isaac and Jacob moving forward. The Hebrews writer says they were able to leave home. They were able to live in this foreign land and to live in these tents because they were longing for something, he says, that was better. They were longing for a city with true foundations, a city which was built by God. He goes on to say, verse 14, "For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, and he has prepared for them a city." Abraham could live in a tent in a foreign land, cut off from his home and his family, because Abraham was looking for something better, something more permanent. Abraham was looking for heaven. And the writer says he could have gone home. He could have quit all of this any time, but he persevered because he believed that the reward was going to be worth it. And so, like the call of Abraham, the call of the missionary is one of longing. It's a longing for something better, a longing for something more permanent. It's a longing to be in heaven, and it's a longing to bring others to heaven with them. You know, my all-time favorite moment in missions actually came before we moved to Fiji. I was on a campaign on a small island called Christmas Island. Christmas Island is just a tiny atoll located in the middle of the South Pacific, very close to the equator. And we had been there all week long doing this evangelistic outreach campaign. And Sunday morning had rolled around, and we had been able to meet with the brethren. It was a combined service between two congregations where we'd come together and had a great worship service. And we rested a little bit after lunch, and then that afternoon we were able to go out. They had reserved this place. It was in this lagoon. Had pavilions and set up. It was a place you could rent. And so they had rented it so we could just go out, all the members of the church, and have this combined fellowship time out there. And it was just this wonderful day. We were throwing a football. Some of them were fishing. Some of them were paddling the canoe. Some of them were swimming. Some of the adults were cooking, and they were cooking lobster and grilled fish that they had caught that morning. Henderson, when was the last time you had a fellowship meal where lobster was the main dish? And so they were cooking the lobster. And it was just this incredible day. And so as evening began to fall, we gathered together under one of the pavilions for our evening assembly, our evening worship service. And we sang some songs together, and then it was time to preach, and it was my night to speak. And as I stood up before the audience and looked out, I saw them sitting there, the lagoon behind them, and the sun had set, and just this brilliant red and orange sky, just this perfect sunset. And it was just this perfect moment. We'd had this wonderful day of worship and fellowship. I was surrounded by kind and loving Christians, and gorgeous sunset. I still had all my hair. Sorry, let me pull that up there. Still had all my hair. And the topic that I had been given for that night was heaven. I'm going to tell you, I've never had an easier or more emotional time preaching than I did preaching about heaven in that moment. Heaven. You want to understand what causes, or to understand what it is that drives the missionary forward? What causes him to leave his home and his family behind, what causes him, you know, what sustains him in a foreign land. It's all about heaven. It's all about having a desire to go to heaven, and it's all about a desire to take others there with us. When placed in the context of heaven, all those sacrifices that one has to make along the way, they really become small indeed. And you start to realize in these moments that I can eat the occasional fish head with the eye staring at me at a fellowship meal with the brethren, if it means that one day I'm going to get to sit across the table and eat manna with them in heaven. And you realize I can wear a sulu, that masculine, manly wraparound garment. I can wear that sulu from time to time if it means that I'm helping others to put on those robes of white. And to realize that I can spend a few months and even years away from my family and my friends if it means I'm going to know that many more people in heaven. Heaven. At the end of the day, isn't this what Jesus did for us? He left his Father. He left his home to come to this foreign land, this place where he never belonged. They mocked him. They ignored him. They ridiculed him. They chased him away. And eventually, they just killed him to get rid of him. And you ask, well, why did he do it? Heaven. He suffered. He died because he wanted us to go to heaven. He'd been there. He knew how wonderful it was, and he wanted us there with him. And so whether we're talking about going overseas this morning or we're talking about just here in the community of Henderson, it's still all about heaven. It's about helping me to get to heaven. And it's about helping you to get to heaven. And it's about helping all of them to get to heaven. And so this morning, if you're not a Christian, then we want you to know that Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God, died on a cross so that you can get to heaven. And if you believe that, and if you are prepared this morning to confess that, then we want you to know we are here ready to help you. We're ready to baptize you into the precious blood of Jesus Christ so that you can have your sins washed away, so that you can go to heaven. Acts 22:16. If you're not a Christian, but maybe you're struggling with sin, then we want you to understand that Jesus still loves you. And he's ready to serve as an advocate on your behalf because he wants you to go to heaven. 1 John 2:1-2. And if you will confess your sins to the Father, then you're going to find, according to 1 John 1:8, that he's a loving Father, faithful and righteous to forgive you of all unrighteousness. This morning, we just want to know, how can we help you get to heaven? And we're inviting you to let us know that by coming forward as we stand and sing this song.